What is middle housing?
A middle housing, it's a range of building forms that are house scale, 2-3 stories in height. It is grade-oriented housing. So typically your front door, you walk out and you're at grade. It's been missing. And so the middle part of the story is because of it's been mostly prohibited by zoning and policy, you know, since the 40s and 50s. And it typically is less dependent on parking. So it looks at transit and alternative modes of travel as the choice that at least a portion of the folks that'll live in the middle housing will use as opposed to a private automobile.
Welcome to Journey with Purpose. This is episode 27. I'm your host, Randy Plummel. If we haven't met, I'm a former architect and owner of a small but mighty design firm called Expedition Works, where we help the public sector design better experiences for people. In today's episode, from our friends to the north in Calgary, Canada, we speak with David White. He is part of Civic Works, a design and building company that is all about creating a wider and more integrated set of housing. And we're going to speak about middle housing and what causes our cities to look the same and what might we do about it. Surprise, surprise, we can make cities better with this one simple trick. And let's find out what that is today. David, welcome to the show. Can you tell us who you are, where we're speaking to you, and what do you do?
Dave White, founder and principal of an urban planning consulting shop here in Calgary, Alberta. And we focus on growth and change for the private land redevelopment community. And so we're at the forefront of redevelopment in our cities. So not necessarily, you know, new growth or what some folks call greenfield, but it's where people already live and thrive. And we're proposing change like taller buildings, more homes, and things that end up having a more animated conversation than other types of urban planning work.
From your point of view, I'd love to hear about what are the benefits to those taller houses, more density, more people. What's good for people? And then what's also good for, say, like your neighborhood and the city?
Middle housing in the Calgary context is really important because it's about options, choice, and it's about affordability. So some of the most desirable neighborhoods in our city have an existing development pattern that's often single-family detached home predominant. And we do have various vintages of middle housing, which is a spectrum of things from a single house to clustered row houses, stacked row houses, you know, walk-up apartment style buildings, lower scale, say 4 stories. And middle housing has been, relatively speaking, really challenging to see developed for zoning rule and policy reasons until more recently. But without a doubt, folks are interested in living in places that have, you know, really good amenities, kind of main streets, walkable high streets, access to better transit, proximities to other things like where they're going to work. And if there are not options, mostly in the spectrum of affordability, which relates to household size and age and stage of life, bigger place, bigger family, kids, things of this nature. If those options aren't in those communities, then it's really challenging to talk about complete community building, diverse and inclusive. That's a big conversation we've been having in Calgary in, say, the last decade, and in just the last few years, made big strides through policy and zoning to make it a heck of a lot more enabled in terms of that kind of change. And it's usually one application, one developer, one builder at a time in the redeveloping context, but it's slowly happening. So it's pretty exciting.
So my sense, and I'd love for you to confirm or complicate this, is that at least here in the States, we used to be able to build a wider range set of housing and buildings. And then 70, 80 years ago, that started to change, and for a variety of reasons. I'd love to hear your take of how we got here, and why do you think this sort of set of policy, building, lifestyle has got us to this situation?
It's a great question. There's a Calgary story to it, but I don't think it's wholly dissimilar from a North American perspective. We have examples kind of pre-1940s, 50s, and an era where there was an absence of certain kind of regulation zoning that by a more organic, market-driven perspective, you would see things like middle housing developed, all different types and forms and scales. This shift to more prohibitive zoning and policies, which arrived in the 1940s and then got increasingly toothier with time. If there was one big development form driving regulation that started to shift the ability to do a more diverse range of middle housing, it would be the relationship to minimums on parking. The minimum parking relationship, because it's a land-hungry consideration on any parcel size or shape, whether that be for the primary, secondary, or visitor relationship to the dwelling on the site, really created a challenge to be able to enable more homes, stacking homes, more optimal utilized use of land for things other than parking. And for middle housing, things like underground or structured parking, it's just really not an option. It doesn't pencil. So once you require the parking, you de facto really minimize the number of doors you can put on a site. And then, you know, that's the kind of the nerdy answer, but I think there's a vintage even in Calgary, a certain kind of instruments and other mechanisms that were registered on land titles or parcels in the Canadian context that ended up prohibiting the development of more than, say, a single family detached home on any one parcel. And that was an earlier form of prohibitive zoning, but I think combination of that and then more widespread thinking around auto dependence and parking minimums really curtailed the ability to see more diverse forms in that middle range.
So I think it's important to stop here and take a moment to think about the framing of a lot of this conversation. A lot of times people might say, let's get rid of single family zoning. And oftentimes that is a shorthand for saying, let's get rid of only requiring single family zoning. The goal isn't to make single family detached homes illegal. That's furthest from the truth. I believe, and I feel like a lot of people in this space are ultimately saying, hey, we used to build a wider range of homes, and let's allow ourselves the ability to build a wider range of homes and shops and places for people to work, allowing us a greater freedom of what people can build on their sites. Because fairly recently, for a variety of reasons, we came and said, we're going to restrict what you can do. We've made it harder to build the types of housing and the types of neighborhoods that were built 100 years ago. And so our housing stock is not resilient enough. And our families don't look at all like this idealized family unit from the 1950s where there's a man and a wife and two kids and the woman stays home and takes care of the house and the kids are obedient and the father goes and drives here and there. That wasn't necessarily true then at all. And it's definitely not true now. And when I work with AARP, they're very interested in both livable communities, aging in place, about creating housing that is both more adaptable to our changing lifestyles and to the families that exist now, and the ability to build a wider range of unit types from studios to single-family homes that are attached, that are detached, multiple family dwellings. Housing that you could have a main house up front, an accessory dwelling unit in the back, so you can either rent it out or you can have a family member live there. Now, I'd like to get your point of view from the Calgary perspective. Is this a marketing problem, a policy issue, or sort of a yes issue?
It's a good question. My first reaction to it is, I think certain parts of North American city building industry, instead of set up a kind of a market perception about exclusive enclaves of a particular type of real estate and lifestyle. And there are parts of North America that took it much further through other controls, mechanisms, and all kinds of good stuff we could talk about. But just generally speaking, in Calgary, there were, you know, wholesale, predominant single family detached home communities built around lake amenities and the other things. And that whole perception and buying into that community lifestyle, I think, has carried over even generationally to a degree as, you know, boomers move on, but, you know, younger families move in. I think that's part of what's happened in terms of this fear of what the policy shift towards enabling more middle housing means to some folks. And they get a lot of anxiety about that change. But whether it be these options because you're different ages, stages, wages, whether it be just strictly, you know, striking at the affordability piece, those types of communities are problematic for all kinds of smart growth, infrastructure, triple bottom line reasons. The conversation we have locally, and I have it all the time, and you know, I don't win any hearts and minds with it, is the single family detached house in the city of Calgary is not an endangered species, and it won't be for 100 years or more. And it'll always be part of the mix. And middle housing is, you know, relatively speaking, 2 and 3 story house scale forms. Do more households thrive next door to you at your single family detached home, white picket fence and garden lot with some of these changes over the course of time? Yeah. Do they have externalities like maybe more traffic, more activity, maybe a little less privacy, a little more shadow, a little more overlooking? Sure. But, you know, you're also welcoming more types of people, more diverse household types into your neighborhood. Does that resonate for people? Typically not. I don't think you're going to see the single family detached house disappear anytime soon. And it's a gross exaggeration to think that it's under threat in terms of being part of a healthy part of the mix in most major North American cities.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think if we look to say like biomimicry and in nature, like a good ecosystem is a balanced and interdependent and broader set of things in that ecosystem. And so it seems to me that allowing middle housing allows you to maybe create a thriving Main Street or a walkable district, or maybe it allows you to create a little bit different both housing forms, but also different places across that age and stage of people's lives. If you could wave a magic wand to, say, change a piece of policy or a piece of economics or something like that, that I think could help build more middle housing, what could those policies look like?
The simple one, which we're already headed towards at rapid speed, I think it won't be much more than 2 years from now, is basically there are no parking minimums for any use category across the whole city. It's all market driven, and short of accessible visitor parking, some policies around the future of ever increasing EV charging parking stalls and a few other things, they won't regulate it. And the market will deliver some parking on most projects, but it just won't deliver what those minimums prescribe. And they can be really toxic to performas and development forms, and they can do all kinds of goofy things if they're overly prescriptive. To link to what you were describing about what are some of the benefits, it's a common question we get when we're out in communities talking about an application for some type of development, growth and change. There isn't a good enough correlation, at least in the city of Calgary, but they're getting better at the city hall level, whether that be an elected official or the bureaucrats, in linking investment in amenity, new open space, park space, better sidewalks, new infrastructure, whether it be libraries, rec centers, things of this nature, linking investment to targets around intensity of people and jobs in a particular geographic area. So if that community sees growth and change and is welcoming of growth and change and is increasing in terms of its population base, it should be linked with investments. Some of the more city building minded elected officials here will talk about with density must come amenity. And that requires public investment. So I think if I were to fiddle with some of the budget priorities and policies at the local level, we'd make sure that folks see that demonstrated investment as kind of the upside and the trade-off to seeing, you know, change and more people living in their neighborhood.
I think that's a really good point, that getting rid of parking minimums won't get rid of all parking, even if maybe you secretly want to do that, or a group of people secretly want to get rid of parking and get rid of cars. Like, that's not going to happen. But I think there's something interesting here. When we're starting to densify a neighborhood or area, there's, you know, people are concerned about, say, more traffic or how people are going to get around. I have a lot of empathy for people when they look at change and they try to imagine themselves in the future, because we have not a lot of great tools to help us imagine into the future, especially if you're not trained in this area, that you don't understand deeply how the economics work and the building and construction industry work and how long it takes.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance when some of those other really important forms of mobility, those infrastructure investments aren't there, bike lanes, good transit, frequent, convenient service. So it's kind of a cart before horse, chicken and egg thing. for the city of Calgary, they are, if you're proximate to good transit, active modes, infrastructure, like regional bike lanes and all kinds of good stuff, there's a lot less regulation on things like parking. There's a lot less regulation on certain other considerations. So it's more permissive. But as you're further away from it, they do encourage sometimes more vehicular parking being required. And they also really ramp up things like high quality, adequate bike storage associated with, say, even a primary dwelling or with secondary suite, anything of that nature. So there's a lot of things to do with active modes. In the past, we've also, for projects that are seeking to, say, provide less parking, we've negotiated investments on title through the development process that say, for the first year, the occupants of these homes, they will be gifted transit passes to encourage different behaviors and have different choices. So it's a kind of an investment in alternative and transit supportive measures. You know, so again, it's a balance. I think over time, as infrastructure gets better, you don't need those incentives and tools. But for now, at least City Hall considered as some best practices transitionally, and I think the industry can get their head around it here and there.
This is where in some of the popular culture, things like SimCity, I think, is a net negative in the wider understanding of how neighborhoods are formed, how buildings are built. Because in SimCity, you can just click the R button, the residential button. You can click it on the grid of space and you can zone it. And then all of a sudden, buildings and things pop up. And it seems magical because you don't want to spend years waiting for something to pop up there. It's a game. But I think it's undoubtedly impacted how the popular culture thinks about these things. Because if you rezone something, if you change the zoning overnight, new buildings aren't just going to pop up. Like, we know that's not going to happen. We also know that over time, it is going to be quite uneven, but change will happen. So I'd love to get your perspective on how we can help people imagine that future that just isn't all the negative externalities, but help imagine a more positive set of outcomes that density, people, businesses bring with it.
We'll often characterize growth and change and the scale relative to an annual perspective, whether that geography be the whole city or, say, an individual neighborhood, and say, well, let's just look at what's happened year over year for the last 10 years in your neighborhood and say, you know, all things being equal, this kind of pace of growth and change will be likely. And then we'll do our very best to point to the best examples of what a taller building might mean to the average person on their local main street. And we always talk about, you know, the perceived and real. So the net measurable urban design impact. So, oh my gosh, 6 stories sounds like a really tall building that could be really scary and a lot different than my, you know, single or two story, you know, home neighborhood. So we try to contextualize and talk about that in plain language. And then again, just the relative scale of growth and change. I think that urban planning type folks have gotten a lot better at talking in plain language and looking at the big moves over the right time scale. So nodes and corridors, you know, main streets and avenues, like, where will the greatest intensity be and why is that important to your neighborhood, and that pace of change and relative growth perspective. So we borrow from the same types of conversation spaces that we see with a lot of the folks in the public sector driving this type of policy. Does it resonate for everyone? Not always, but I think some folks, if you can have a slow plain language conversation, can get it. And it makes a big difference in maybe taking some of the anxiety about what change really means to your neighborhood out of it. And then when you see the long-term and the relative pace of change, folks will joke that, you know, they'll be dead and gone, or they'll have moved on anyway in that, you know, 20, 30, 40 year horizon. So again, the anxiety comes down. My name is Dave White. I'm an urban planner based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Founder and principal of a company called CivicWorks. CivicWorks is a group of urbanists based here in Calgary that are doing a lot of good work on growth and change. And we are happy to be in one of Canada's largest cities.
All right. My thanks to Dave White for sharing the Canadian perspective on middle housing. It always seems to be about cars, doesn't it? So if you remember our last episode, episode 26, we spoke to two researchers from Montreal who showed in their research that car-focused streets, which allow cars to drive way too fast, reduce children's mobility by 75%. Make sure you understand it. These are designed. Somebody made a decision to design streets so that cars can zip past their unsafe speeds. Anything above 20 or 25 miles an hour in an urban context is unsafe. And here we find in Calgary that mandating parking, that requiring of homes for cars over people, increases the cost of these homes while homogenizing those homes to all look and function the same. And I think we intuitively know that that's not a great outcome. This isn't some conspiracy against you owning or having a car. I own a car in New York. It's silly, but we use it for a variety of reasons. But on the daily, we walk, we scooter, we bike, we go about our day. Acknowledging that the car, while it is a great tool, shouldn't and isn't the solution to every mobility problem, especially in urban areas. And mandating homes for cars over people creates really bad outcomes at the societal level. There isn't anything natural about a car-based neighborhood. We, in fact, spent thousands of years without them. And some of our most beautiful neighborhoods in the world and in North America are tight, compact, walkable neighborhoods. You go to Disney World and Disneyland, it's a walkable neighborhood. Okay, so this was another episode of Journey with Purpose. As usual, all views on this episode do not reflect our employers, past or present. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to the podcast. You can hear us on Spotify. You can hear us on Apple. You can hear us wherever good podcasts are listened to. Please give us a star rating. Give us some feedback. Tell your neighbors. Tell your friends. These sort of non-monetary benefits help grow the show. And really, you know, it's a good warm and fuzzy, and it doesn't cost you anything. So head over to jwp.news for everything podcast and pamphlet related. They make good stocking stuffers for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever you do during the winter times. We hope you're safe and see you on the internets. Good day.